This message comes from OnPoint's sponsor, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you qualify, and if rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. To learn more, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Eric Westervelt. This is On Point. CEO Indra Nooyi announced this week she's stepping down from PepsiCo. Her departure will leave only 24 women at the helm of America's top public companies. That's less than 5% of the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index. In 2018, the glass ceiling to the C-suite is still rock solid for most women in corporate America. And the number of women chief executives is falling, not rising. While women make up close to half of the U.S. workforce today, a female CEO has succeeded another woman at a public company only 3 times in history, according to the consulting firm Catalyst. Only 3 times. This hour, On Point, the roadblocks women face to the C-suite. You can join us on air and online. Are you surprised it's still so hard to find women chief executives at America's top companies? What's the impact of having more female leaders in business? What can change this dynamic? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining me now from New York is Sheila Kolhatkar, staff writer at The New Yorker, covering business. She's also a former Wall Street hedge fund analyst. You can link to her recent story headlined Indra Nooyi and the Vanishing Female CEO at her website, onpointradio.org. And Sheila, welcome to On Point.
It's nice to be here.
Thanks so much for coming in. Sheila, this is not a new problem, but women still make up just 11% of the highest paid jobs in corporate America, 11%. Progress remains glacially slow. Talk about why.
Well, if you look at the numbers over time, in 2006, when Ms. Nooyi became CEO of PepsiCo, there were 10 women leading Fortune 500 companies. And the number peaked around 32 in 2017. And then now it has fallen 25% down to 24. So as you've already mentioned, that's less than 5% of the CEOs of major companies. And this is really disturbing when you look at it in the context of what's happened in other areas of our economy. Women have surged into the education system. They now earn 60% of undergraduate degrees, 60% of master's degrees, 40% of MBAs are now obtained by women. So there's a real disconnect. There's a sign of a real problem. And, part of it has to do with the fact that the women often start off at these companies and they get weeded out before they reach these upper levels where they're in a position to become a CEO and run the company.
They get weeded out, and women rarely get replaced, as you've pointed out in your article, with other women, what some are calling the sort of savior effect. So even if you've got a precedent of a woman taking over a major corporation, if they're replaced, it's often with a man.
I thought Ms. Nooyi made some interesting comments about this on the day she resigned. She said she would have loved for the board to have had a woman to choose from. But at the end of the day, the board chooses a CEO, and there just weren't any women at the company who were ready for the job. And she also complained that some of the female executives she had helped sort of develop and mentor and groom had been poached away to other companies. But this really points to the fact that, the lack of women at the very top reflects the lack of women at the levels just below the top. I mean, you know, becoming a CEO is a long, arduous process. It's an incredibly demanding job. You need experience in all different areas of the company, typically, including international experience, which is something that Indra talked about. That's often hard for women when they have family obligations and husbands with careers. So, you know, it's really a sign that, more needs to be done to not just hire women in the first place, but to keep them and to make sure they get the experience and the opportunities to put them in position to rise up. And that's just not happening.
Well, let's talk about the retention, the disconnect, how women get weeded out or poached away. But first, let's hear from the outgoing CEO, Indra Nooyi. This is her confronting the sort of age-old question, can women really have it all? She was speaking at the 2014 Aspen Ideas Festival.
I don't think women can have it all. I just don't think so. We pretend we have it all. We pretend we can have it all. We plan our lives meticulously so we can be decent parents. But if you ask our daughters, I'm not sure they will say that I've been a good mom.
I'm curious your take. I mean, is part of her stepping aside partly burnout, or she got tired of it? What do you know about her decisions, her reasons behind leaving?
Well, she's spoken a lot about her somewhat unique, at least in this country, family arrangements that allowed her to thrive career-wise and have a family. She has two daughters, but she's spoken about how her extended family, I believe her parents or at least her mother, were very involved in helping her raise her kids. She had a lot of support. And many families in the U.S. don't have that. That is more common culturally in certain other countries. But here, often we don't have that. And what's happened is the expectations for performance at the workplace as women have entered the workforce have just never changed or adjusted to reflect the fact that we now have majority dual working households. Even in homes where women are breadwinners, they often do most of the childcare and housework. That has been documented again and again, even in situations where spouses are present and are being very helpful. So this creates almost the second shift phenomenon. And of course, this affects their performance at the workplace. And mothers pay a large penalty professionally. The moment a woman becomes a parent, she suffers career-wise and perceptions change. And that is not true for men. And I think that's a reflection of the fact that women are still doing the majority of the work in the home, even when they are earning a significant income and helping pay the bills.
So men have a lot more to do both at the corporate management level and at home to support, to help, and to make sure that equity is part of their agenda.
We really can't solve the problem without men. We need to be all partners together to help address this problem. And I thought there was a really interesting nugget in a study done by the Lean In organization in conjunction with McKinsey about women in the workplace. Mm. And one of their observations is that most men in companies do not see a gender problem. And frankly, this applies to people of color as well, and women of color in particular, who suffer the worst from these issues. But, the men just don't see it often. And in reporting I've done, I've noticed that. I've done reporting for The New Yorker about gender issues in the tech world. And one meeting I wrote about at Tesla, the big tech car company, involved a lot of women engineers sort of at this big company meeting, voicing their concerns. They were speaking to an almost entirely male group of senior executives. And it was just interesting because it was almost as if they were in two different companies, the way they perceived the environment. And these women were saying, well, you're not doing enough to give us opportunities. And the men were very focused on their recruiting efforts. And they just didn't realize that once women come into these companies, they don't stay. They get frustrated. They can't rise up above a certain level. In some cases, they claim that they're being paid less than their male counterparts. And they end up leaving for a variety of reasons. And then you end up with an all-male group of executives running the company.
We're talking with Sheila Kolhatkar, The New Yorker, about the glass ceiling. I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation. Joining us now from Logan, Utah, is Christy Glass. She's a professor of sociology at Utah State University. Her research focuses on gender inequality, race, and leadership in the workplace. And Christy, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So Sheila talked a little bit about the weeding out process and the disconnect here as we continue to face the glass ceiling for women in America. Talk a little bit about maybe the motherhood penalties, what your research says on when that weeding out starts to happen and why. What's at work there as women enter the workplace but then end up not climbing into positions of power as much as they should?
Sure. Highly skilled, highly educated women, which is the group of women we're talking about, tend to delay childbearing until they've established themselves in their career. And what that means is they're extremely competitive at kind of entry level and mid level kind of professional careers. Once they begin having children, employers' perception of them changes considerably. I've talked to a lot of employers and they say, she's not as committed anymore. She's not as, driven. And while there's research to suggest that that's not true, that women's drive and competence doesn't change after they have children, employers' perception of them changes significantly.
And so there's this almost sexist double standard. If men have, become dads, it's seen as, well, he's now
you know, committed and needs more support. But if women have it, they see women as less committed.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, as Sheila mentioned, you know, these careers, the investment that it takes to build a career that results in a you know, C-suite role takes years. And it's at that critical point, where women might be being weeded out, you know, the 30s and early 40s that are so critical in the career, that might be when employers' perception of their commitment is starting to change.
Well, and I've noted too in both your work that you've talked about, you know, women are often given the reins of a company in a time of crisis, which can kind of, you know, set them up for failure. You know, here it's on fire. You put it out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Women and people of color are much more likely to be appointed CEO during times of crisis, you know, in the wake of a scandal or, you know, following significant revenue declines. And this means that not only are they highly visible and scrutinized as kind of non-traditional CEOs, but they're also responsible for leading a company through crisis. And that would be challenging for anybody. But I think it's particularly challenging for women and people of color who face a burden of doubt about their competence and capability, and who are highly, highly visible and scrutinized.
The glass cliff, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about much more. We're talking about CEO Indra Nooyi's departure from PepsiCo and the thinning ranks of women at the top of U.S. corporations and in leadership positions. Join the conversation. Have you ever felt passed over for a promotion due to your gender? Do you see different career development opportunities given to men over women at your workplace? I'm Eric Westervelt. You're listening to On Point.
This message comes from On Point's sponsor, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing their all-new Rate Shield approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Quicken Loans will lock your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030.
Hey, Asma.
Hey, Scott.
Another crazy week. We've got North Korea.
Yep, we got Russia.
Midterms.
And, of course, President Trump. And what happens whenever there is crazy news that erupts? We pop into the studio and break it down to make sense.
So if you see a headline,
we've discussed it.
It's the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to On Point from NPR and WBUR. I'm Eric Westervelt. We're taking a look at the dwindling number of women CEOs and leaders at America's top public companies. Women make up just 11% of the highest paid jobs in corporate America today. You can join the conversation. Where in the pipeline do women lose out on promotions, do you think, leading up to the C-suite? What biases have you felt as a woman or person of color in your office? Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Send in your questions. We have Sheila Kolhatkar, staff writer at The New Yorker. She covers business. And Christy Glass, a sociology professor at Utah State University. And let's get some women callers into the mix. Hannah is calling from Trumansburg, New York. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. I just wanted to say, as a new first-time nursing mother and a small business owner, it's been driven home more than ever just how difficult it is to reach a higher level of business without having childcare in this country. I have to pay for my own childcare and coming completely out of pocket. And if it wasn't for a family living nearby, I would be sunk and I wouldn't be in business at all currently.
Thanks for your call. Christy Glass, we're talking about the motherhood penalties and the importance of childcare from Hannah's question.
Absolutely. When we, you know, the U.S. Is an outlier to some degree in terms of not providing public childcare or paid leave, guaranteed paid leave. And when we look at, you know, when we compare women's employment opportunities in other countries, we see that those things really matter in terms of enabling women to sustain a strong attachment to the labor market. And we also know that gaps in employment really hurt women. So I think the caller is absolutely right that we lack a lot of the key supports that would facilitate women's sustained attachment to the labor market that over time could lead to occupational mobility.
And a question from a listener on our website. Do women become CEOs of large companies in greater numbers in G7 European countries? It would be helpful to look at international benchmarks to get a sense of whether U.S. Fortune 500 ranked companies are way off. Can you talk a little bit, Sheila, about, you know, is Europe doing better, both when it comes to corporate leadership and boards of directors?
Well, I know that there has been an interesting campaign that started in the U.K. to try and get more women on boards of directors of companies, because that is seen as a really important, not only contributor to kind of good decision making and good compliance at companies, but also, you know, having a more diverse group of people on the board leads to broader searches for top executives, more people contributing to conversations about who should become a CEO. So there's this group called the 30% Club, which was campaigning to try to get companies to sign on and commit to having 30% women on their boards. And
we're not there yet.
Not there yet, but there has been some success, and there's a U.S. chapter as well, and I believe the group is promoting 28% now in the U.K. And there are other countries. Norway, I think, was one of the first that have actually mandated, you know, quotas on boards, and it is hard to see a quota system like that really working in the United States. It's sort of culturally at odds with the way things are done here, but it has been effective, and at some point, I think it makes sense to start to consider, you know, a more regulatory sort of approach, because this organic approach has not worked. The progress has been extremely slow, and, you know, we might need to put more public pressure on companies to commit to making changes in this area.
Yeah, that's a good point. And if quotas are sort of culturally not in line with America's business culture, you know, are there incentives, Christy Glass? Are there other things that companies can do both to promote women into leadership and make sure their boards reflect the diversity of America?
Yeah, absolutely. I think all too often the approach that companies take to board diversity, there has been more pressure on companies to pursue board diversity, but all too often companies pursue what's called the one and done policy, where they appoint one woman or one person of color and call it good. In fact, we know that the greatest likelihood that a woman will be appointed to a board is when the current woman steps down from the board. But there's lots of research to suggest that one and done isn't enough. Board diversity can make a huge impact on opportunities for women's promotion, support for women leaders, as well as a host of other things that companies really care about: innovation, pay equity, stronger governance, more transparency. Board diversity makes a difference in terms of those things. But the one and done doesn't do it. We need really strong, influential women or people of color and a critical mass of those voices. One and done is just, you know, empirically, it's just not impactful.
Let's take some more calls. Lisa is calling from Indiana. Lisa, welcome to On Point. Lisa, are you with us? All right, let's try Faye from Vermont. Faye, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to bring up a point that kind of speaks to that second shift thing that you guys were talking about. I know that in Vermont, and not only in Vermont, but across our nation, female-headed households with dependents are upon the poorest households. And this is true everywhere in our world. And we're also 50% more likely to be the primary caregivers in our homes, not just to our children, but also to our aging parents or aging or ailing family members. So even if we are given an opportunity in the workplace, our personal lives are often fighting against us in that, because we're not offered any type of support from our employer. There's no paid leave from our state. Like, there's so many facts that are acting against us and our ability to care for our families and be engaged full-time in the workforce.
Faye, thanks for your call. Sheila, I wonder if you want to take this. I mean, she's talking about better support from employees, whether it's paid leave and maybe some regulatory or governmental action to help spur that support.
Obviously, that is a huge issue, and partly it is somewhat cultural, but there's also a policy aspect of this, too. And as Professor Glass already mentioned, there's no paid leave. We are an outlier here in terms of the supports we give to working parents. We suffer as a result of it. A lot of these issues would be mitigated if we had a policy in place to try and ease the burden. And what was remarkable to me, even during the last presidential campaign, we had a female candidate running for the presidency, but this rarely came up in the context of the campaign as a policy issue. And I was sort of surprised by that. I mean, occasionally Hillary Clinton would talk about maternity leave, but it just really wasn't a central issue in the conversation, even though we do have an enormous cohort of working women complaining about this and suffering as a result. And yes, paying an economic price, and their children pay an economic price because they're not compensated fairly, or they're not able to work as much as they need to. So that really needs to become a part of the policy discussion, and that's an important part of what we need to do as a society to address this issue.
Yeah, it really was remarkable. It wasn't more part of the public policy debate, given Hillary Clinton's nomination, Sheryl Sandberg's best-selling book, Lean In, and yet it really wasn't part of the conversation. I want to bring another voice into this conversation. Joining us now from New York is Pamela Carlton, president and founder of the leadership consulting firm Springboard. She's also co-founder of the Everest Project, a research initiative on the challenges faced by women leaders in America. Before launching Springboard, Pamela spent some two decades working on Wall Street as an investment banker. Pamela, thanks for joining us on Point.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to throw you the giant question of, what's the most important sort of systems change you think that needs to take place to change this dynamic? HR departments, current leaders, men at home and in the workforce, what are the biggest big systems change roadblocks out there that need to be pushed over?
Eric, I would say, unfortunately, or fortunately, all of the above.
Right.
I think in companies, you need to have a CEO, a sitting executive team that's really committed to increasing the numbers of women and people of color in increasingly senior positions. But that's necessary, but not sufficient. An average CEO tenure is 5 years. Culture change takes 7 years on average. So you've got to have more things operating to support women and people of color as they move along in their careers. One of the things that is now viewed as a best practice in companies is mandating diverse candidate slates to not only as women are coming into the organization, but as they're being promoted to positions internally, is to require that on big positions that managers must look at a diverse candidate slate. And this actually came from the National Football League, the old Rooney Rule, as I'm sure many of you listeners are familiar with, even if they're women, that to get coaches, senior coaches who were black or people of color, they mandated that the slate have minorities on the slate. And that is happening in corporate America as well. And we're finding that particularly if you mandate that there is more than one female or more than one person of color on the candidate slate, the likelihood that there will be a minority or a female as the winning candidate increases. So that's another. And I'll just mention one more thing that companies and women need to focus on early on in their careers is having a plan to get there. and that is getting big opportunities early in their careers. If you look at somebody like Ursula Burns, the former CEO of Xerox, who I interviewed a number of times, she had very senior level leadership responsibilities in her late 20s.
And so, have a strategy, have a plan to go forward early.
Yeah. That gives people a long runway.
But corporate culture has taken a really long time to change. Change is slow. Let's take some more callers. Carol is calling from Maine. Carol, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Eric. Thank you. I just am responding to the topic, essentially, because I think that we have a much larger issue here, and that's really the whole culture of corporate America, which is in the past 50 years changed dramatically from the kind of business where you could go to work and be guaranteed a job for 35 years. You could be guaranteed benefits when you retired, where CEOs were paid appropriate amounts of money. There wasn't an issue at that time with women, of course, and having been my own self-employed person in the 70s, I started my own business, so I was my own CEO, and I didn't have to talk to anybody else about that. Mm. And that was really the only way to do that back then. So there is a huge problem with women not being able to, but the culture of corporate America has become so difficult for men as well. I think it's important to note this in how competitive it is, the CEO positions that are so distorted in the culture, and it's not a culture that's supporting anyone.
You mean they're distorted because of these giant paychecks? What do you mean when you say the culture we need to...
Because they're profit-driven. Corporations became identified as being people, and they're profit centers, and these profit centers, unfortunately, are places where the little guy doesn't really matter. If they're going to be able to, make their bucks for the company, then they're worthwhile. It's not a culture that says we're trying to take care of everybody in this company. It's not a holistic view of business. It's a very much a profit-driven model, which means there's not a lot of safety in these places for people. I think it's the soul of the corporation in America is gone. And looking for women to become CEOs of these soulless corporations that are essentially out of balance, not only for them personally, but for the culture itself, is really the issue at hand.
Great point, Carol. Appreciate your call. Sheila, I want to go to you. I mean, Carol's point of inflated salaries, distorted culture, something is rotten there at the core, she was sort of saying.
Well, it's true that we have seen really since the 1980s the rise of the shareholder rights movement, which sounds sort of boring and obscure, but in fact, it affects everything because what it has gradually done throughout the Reagan years and it's continued is that companies are now under pressure to deliver every penny they can to their shareholders. And that has led them to make different kinds of decisions. They don't make long-term investments anymore. This whatever social contract perhaps once existed between companies and workers and the towns where they were locating their manufacturing facilities, that is all gone. We've seen rise of outsourcing, more contract workers, the gig economy. So your caller is very correct that things have become more insecure in general for everyone because companies are really not allowed to invest anymore in their businesses. They're supposed to be passing everything they can on to shareholders. And if they don't, Wall Street gets very angry and punishes them. So in that kind of environment, it can be a tough ask to tell them to suddenly go out of their way to seek more diverse business executives. I don't think that is an adequate excuse to not do it. But I think it makes the push even more difficult. Absolutely.
Let's hear again from Pepsi's outgoing CEO, Indra Nooyi. Here she is at the 2016 Women in the World Summit explaining the importance of female mentorship.
I don't believe women help women enough. I think we have to change our whole approach to supporting each other, taking advice from each other, seeking it out. One thing I feel very badly about, all my mentors in life have been male.
Christy Glass, I want to throw to you. What more can women do in terms of mentorship and helping others on the way up?
Sure. Well, I'll maybe respectfully disagree with Indra Nooyi in the sense that I think companies first need to stop treating equity and diversity as a side project, and I think they need to stop treating it as women's work. All too often, when women are appointed to kind of visible leadership roles, not only do they bear the burden of being the first woman or a highly visible woman and the scrutiny that comes along with that, but they're also held to another standard in terms of advancing other women. Yet when they do, they're often seen as kind of self-serving. I think that puts women in a double bind. I think men really need to start doing more of this work.
We'll talk about that and much more. You can join the conversation. Do you work with a female chief executive? How has a woman's leadership changed your workplace? We're taking a look at why so few women and even fewer women of color make it to the chief executive at top corporations. I'm Eric Westervelt. You're listening to On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Did cutting taxes actually grow the economy?
And what makes DJ Khaled the king of pop music?
The Indicator, a daily podcast where we tackle the big economic questions.
You're listening to On Point. I'm Eric Westervelt. We're taking a look at the barriers women face moving up to top company positions and potential solutions to the problem. You can join us, join the conversation. What changes in workplace culture might help solve this? What responsibilities do corporate boards have to change these statistics and this dynamic? How about male coworkers? You can always follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We have with us Sheila Kolhatkar, staff writer at The New Yorker who covers business, Christy Glass, sociology professor at Utah State University, and Pamela Carlton, president and founder of the leadership consulting firm Springboard. And Pamela Carlton, we were talking about mentorship right before the break, and I'm wondering at the Everest Project, which you're a co-founder of, what are you doing specifically on the mentorship issue to help?
We are, one thing I'll mention is distinguishing between mentorship and sponsorship. Everyone needs great mentors along the way, but having a sponsor, the person who's going to open the doors, help you navigate, who's going to talk about how great you are in the promotion meetings where you're not there. So women, people of color, need to have the opportunity to get to know well the movers and shakers and decision makers along the way in their careers and not just focus on having mentors.
That's an interesting point. Samantha is calling us from Boston. Samantha, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome.
So I wanted to check in and see kind of what everyone's thoughts are. There was a TED Talk from Reshma Sajani. She's the CEO and founder of Girls Who Code. And she talked about the fact that men will apply for a job if they meet only 60% of the qualifications, but women will only apply if they meet 100% of the qualifications, and kind of went on to say how more kind of confident in their abilities. Do you think that this is something that's leading to women not applying for higher up positions such as CEO, COO, and things like that?
So you're saying men don't hold back, I think, where women seem to exhibit less confidence. Is that your question?
Yes, yeah, and just kind of curious about kind of more of the systemic approach that, you know, women aren't applying for these jobs and we're not being pushed to apply for these jobs. You know, where do we go and how do we fix it?
Sheila, I wonder if you could take that, Samantha's question. Did you see that when you worked on Wall Street and as you cover business now?
Well, absolutely. Certainly anecdotally, many women are often reticent to tout their own accomplishments. I think perhaps due to a lack of role models who do this successfully, women are just not taught to do this. While men are infused through a variety of means, many of them through culture and media and role models in their lives, they act more like leaders, which part of that involves, being very confident, being willing to go right up to the boss and pitch an idea. You know, there's a lot of documentation about this kind of thing, too. You know, women often state things in meetings and they will be ignored. And then when male colleagues repeat their points, everyone suddenly says, oh, wow, great idea. And there's a bit of a campaign on to encourage men to give credit to women if they were actually the original source of the ideas. I should add, it's a challenge for women because they're often, penalized for being too confident. You know, there's a lot of very gendered language that's used in the workplace to criticize women and justify paying them less, for example, or not promoting them. And they're often told that they're, you know, they're being too arrogant or they're too shrill or whatever it is. And so women are stuck in a bit of, you know, with a bit of a double-edged sword there because they need to, you know, they need to walk this incredibly fine line. They sort of need to be perfect for everything to work and fall into place. And that's hard for anybody.
Those added pressures on them. Christy Glass, I want to ask you, we have a listener on our website who asks, Phyllis Crane says, having worked full-time since my daughters were born 21 years ago, I'd argue companies have substantially improved family support policies and systems since the mid-90s. Do you think that's true?
So, sure, we have more family-friendly policies on the books, but research about use of those policies suggests that they're very underutilized, and A, and B, there are penalties for workers who take advantage of those. So we have research that shows, you know, if you take advantage of flexible workplace or, part-time for a period of time, you face penalties in terms of long-term wage growth and in terms of promotion potential. And so I think workers understand that the policies exist and they're used to recruit highly skilled, talented workers, but they're kind of fraught. In terms of how you actually use them to make your life work and still advance in your career.
We're talking about gender equality in the workplace. Brian, you're joining the conversation from Baltimore. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Eric. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I mean, I'm sitting here listening to this. I'm going down the road, and I just think there is a point of this that everyone's missing here. The big thing is that businesses don't start up because of the idea of let's just figure out gender equality or, you know, minorities' participations and things of that nature. I think one of the things that I keep hearing here is that, you know, we need to make policies. And the one lady who was speaking earlier was talking about when you made the point of how does Europe and G7 take, you know, she really couldn't come up with any answers. No one's doing any more than this than the United States of America. I mean, we try our hardest here because we're so held to such high standards. I think one of the things that everyone's missing here is that businesses are in line to make money, and no one talks about this idea of sacrifice. You look and you start polling how many men work ungodly hours or try to, you know, figure out a way to get themselves in and know the movers and the shakers, and you'll find that that's why they're successful. It's not because no one's holding anybody back. It's because we are willing to take those sacrifices. You know, one of the ladies that commented a minute ago, she was like, oh, you know, it's a good thing I have family nearby because I wouldn't be able to do this. Well, you know, it goes back to family values as well. I mean, you know, if, you know, maybe having a kid at 22 years old in your life is not the time to have a kid.
All right, Brian.
Or whatever the case may be.
You've made some good points. I appreciate it. Pamela Carlton, to Brian's point, partly that, look, businesses are about making money, about corporate profits. This is not a social service agency. Equality, maybe, according to him, shouldn't be top.
Being a CEO is hard. Companies are now not only nationally competitive, they are globally competitive. I'm working with a company now where the CEO was on a plane 300 days of the year in 2017. That's incredible. So I think your caller makes a really good point that being a CEO in today's companies is harder than ever. But there are opportunities, there should be opportunities for everyone to have an equal shot at those 300 days on the plane, if that's what it takes to be a successful company. I think there's no question that women can make and are making decisions in their families as to who is going to have the top career of the two in the household. And a number of the women that I have seen make it to the top, have had very good family lives, but their career took precedence.
Well, some companies are trying to level the playing field, both in the workplace and in what you might call the pay field. Here is Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff, who told 60 Minutes correspondent Leslie Stahl in April that an internal audit of his company found a gender pay gap at every level of the corporation.
It's everywhere. It was through the whole company, every division, every department, every geography.
So how did you remedy that?
We said we're going to pay men and women equally at Salesforce. And we're going to go through and we're going to level set every job and every division, every department, and we're going to make sure that we have gender equality.
Sheila Kolhatkar, I'm just wondering, is Mark Benioff and Salesforce an outlier here, or more large corporations doing that kind of audit?
I think it is hopefully becoming a little bit of a trend, but no, there's a differential in what men and women are paid at every company I've ever really looked at, and in every industry. I mean, that is just true. Women walk through the door and there's just a discount. Mm. And I think that adjusting that and being transparent about it would go a long way to helping to at least begin to alleviate this problem. Because when you have women consistently being paid less than men, it creates inequities at home as well as in the workplace. So they go home and their husband is making more money than they are. So when the conversation happens about who's going to cut back once they start having children, often they have to make that decision based on who earns more money. Well, if the women are always being paid less, they're never going to be in a position to argue that their career or their salary should be prioritized. Mm. And, you know, they also become really frustrated and aggravated. And you know, it's also fair to note, as the previous male caller pointed out, that women do bear some responsibility for some elements of this. I mean, some of them just don't want to do the corporate law firm job where they have to be at work every day until 10 p.m. Hmm. I would argue that a lot more of that punishing face time goes on than is necessary. And if companies really wanted to, they could remain competitive and adjust some of those corporate culture, you know, values that dominate right now.
That's a good point. They could make some adjustments that could make things easier and not put as much pressure to spend the 16-hour days for some of these women. Yeah. Kelly is calling from Illinois. Kelly, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Eric. Thank you for having me.
What's your comment?
So I'm a professional woman in my field, a salaried employee in my company, and I am 6 months postpartum trying to breastfeed at work, and we know from a preponderance of evidence that that's what's best for women and their babies. But when we return to work, that space isn't really made for us professionally as professionals in our field. I mean, I have time to pump and space to pump, but I miss out on meetings, and I have to plan my day in such a way that it's longer in order to make up for any sort of work that's going on and to catch up on things. And that's just the reality biologically for women. If you want to go back to work and pursue your professional goals and also breastfeed, you're going to have more challenges than a man is after they've had a child. And I don't know, you know, maternal leave policies obviously could be expanded to mm-hmm. give us more time at home, but there's still this gap when you return to work that breastfeeding feels like this dirty word and you have to secretly plan it around all of your meetings and you have to feel like you have to choose between what's right for you and your child and what's right for your career trajectory.
Thanks for your call, Kelly. Really appreciate it. Pamela Carlton, to you, Kelly's feeling a bit stressed out, like maybe she's real or not. She's feeling like she might be falling behind. Talk about that.
Those are real issues, to be sure. There are some enlightened companies that do make space available, do have those policies in place, the dreaded P word policies. Companies now have lactation rooms that help make that possible. But I would tell that the caller and many other women who are facing that particular issue, it's an important issue, but it's a temporary issue. Mm-hmm. And that women and their colleagues, one, need to support each other, men as well, and also know that in a period of time, that will diminish. There will be other issues that will come up. It will be, you know, making sure that your child is getting off to nursery school or getting to the school play or making the baseball game. There will always be issues along the way. And that's where the support, that's where good mentoring support does come in from other women who can help younger women just stay in the game and get over those humps.
And Christy Glass at Utah State University, I want to ask you, what greater role can educational institutions play, whether it's business schools or our undergraduate programs? I mean, Sheila talked early on about the disconnect. More and more women, you know, are getting college educations, are graduating. Yet we still have this corporate lag, both in pay and in representation in leadership roles. What more role can education institutions of higher learning play?
Sure. I mean, my own view is that those statistics that Sheila shared suggest to me that we have a very robust pool of highly skilled, ambitious, talented women who are ready to take on these roles. We are preparing them well. There's no evidence that they're not capable of filling these roles, just, you know, quite the opposite. So the trends in education suggest to me that we have an enormous pool of highly skilled, talented women who should be filtering up into these top roles. The fact that they're not, I think, suggests to me that organizations aren't doing the work to recruit them, retain them, and promote them. And I just want to say, you know, to the previous caller as well, you know, these issues about equity in the context of corporations, this isn't charity. This is about making sure the most talented leaders rise to the top. And I think organizations, corporations are accountable to their shareholders and to a number of stakeholders to make sure that happens. You know, if your top talent isn't rising, if you're losing your top talent somewhere along the pipeline, if by the time your top talent does get to the top, they're exhausted and frustrated, those are real problems that impede your ability to fulfill your mission.
We've got time for one last brief call. Angel is calling from Oklahoma City. Welcome.
Thank you, Eric, for taking my call. My question is how do we get to this equality for everyone when we still have companies in America that commit harassment, they discriminate, and when you go to a corporation, instead of them fixing the problem, they sweep it under the rug, or like I faced, I went to corporate. They had had numerous complaints before. They moved me, cut my pay, and cut my hours.
Angel, you make a great point about companies need to take more responsibility to take complaints seriously. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Sheila Kolhatkar, our staff writer at The New Yorker, thank you for coming in.
Thanks.
Christy Glass, thank you as well.
Thank you.
And Pamela Carlton, president and founder of Springboard, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Coming up tomorrow, Mueller, midterms, Paul Manafort's trial continues, Iran sanctions reimposed, and a trade war with China escalates. It's our Friday news roundtable. We'll talk about it all. I'm Eric Westervelt. You're listening to On Point.